The following program is brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal. Any tax advice on this show is not intended to be used by any person for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons or each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on the topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice. Nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Boy, was that a strong. I was laughing as I was listening to this brand new disclosure, and as I'm listening, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, please pull out every fingernail that I have. But you know what? We'll get used to it as time goes on. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Got a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about some 8 core ideas to guide retirement income planning, and then later on, fraud prevention. There's a big problem with seniors in particular being taken advantage of over telephones and through mail and even people walking up the doors and knocking on them. We're going to go through some of those scams that you can help educate maybe your parents, your grandparents on, because it is focused more on the elderly. And then we're going to have someone call in at 6:30, or I'm sorry, at the bottom of the hour, so that they can tell you their real story. And her name's Virginia, and looking really forward to that. Before that, let's do a little news of the week. We've got information here out of the Fed from the Wall Street Journal. The Federal Reserve officials appear increasingly reluctant to raise short-term interest rates at their March policy meeting and possibly beyond. Market turbulence, China's dimmed outlook, and indications that inflation could stay low for a long time. Officials struggled with the uncertainty about these developments in their January policy meeting, according to minutes released on Wednesday. The Fed's next policy meeting is actually March 15th and 16th. I think that's around spring break. Traders in future markets see a 94% chance that they will not raise rates then, and an 83% chance they won't raise them even before mid-year, and a 50% chance that the Fed won't raise them at all according to the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. You know, I've been saying that for a long time, so has Eric Giesler, that we didn't really expect rates to move from the Fed. They just don't have the indicators to make it happen. Also from the Wall Street Journal, is it now time to kill the $100 bill? The $100 bill is America's most popular currency denomination, and it's also the most endangered. Former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers is calling for a global agreement by monetary authorities to stop issuing notes worth more than $50 or $100. Why? They say it could reduce tax evaders, terrorists, drug dealers, financial criminals. The Treasury Department says there's no plans to change the denominations anytime soon. This isn't the first time it's happened. Back in 1996, the Treasury Department was changing paper money to make it more counterfeit resistant. And then New York Mayor Ed Koch urged President Reagan to eliminate the $100 bill to strike a blow against drug traffickers. The last time the U.S. actually clamped down on large denomination banknotes was in 1969, when the Fed and the Treasury discontinued the issuance of $500, $1,000, $5,000, and $10,000 bills. Now, the U.S. stopped issuing those notes, but they remain legal tender even as of today. But the face value is usually worth more than that because they're a collector item. But eliminating the $100 bill would be really, really tough. There's about $1 trillion of $100 bills floating around out there, and a lot of that's held overseas. The Internal Revenue Service also said that if you eliminated just paper currency altogether, then they would be able to collect more tax revenue and squeeze the deficit down to almost zero. But obviously, if you can't really eliminate currency altogether, because some of these foreign countries actually rely on the dollar to run to when things get a little squeamish. But I guess for you Bitcoin folks, that would all be good news. And then finally, have you driven down Highway 37 South where the I-69 split is? I think this thing's all jacked up, and here's why. I'm heading down I-69 yesterday. No, the day before. And I was trying to hurry up and get home. I live on the south side because I had to get home, get my wife, get back in town to pick up my son from wrestling, get him to voice lessons, then we get to dinner. I mean, we had this whole thing planned out. I'm talking to an old high school friend on the phone, heading down 37 South. All of a sudden, I look up and I think, holy crap, where am I? I was on I-69. Well, if you get on I-69 by mistake, if you're in that left-hand lane, which logically you think goes straight, it doesn't. It actually loops around and heads 69. To keep going straight, you sit in the right-hand lane. It kind of loops you around, and then you go straight. But I'm down 69, and that's a 20-mile loop to actually get back to town. You have to go all the way down to 445, turn around, and come all the way back. So needless to say, I didn't get home by 5:30 like I promised, and I ended up just going directly to pick up my son from wrestling. It all worked out okay, but just be careful if you're heading down 37 South to not get in the wrong lane. Otherwise, you're going to be late to wherever you are going. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk about some of the core ideas of retirement income planning. We've got 8 of them to go over. So when we do that, then after that, we're going to talk about some fraud prevention, and we'll have Virginia calling in at the bottom of the hour. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Well, our good friend Jim Inman obviously loves the new disclosure to start the program. Well, wait a second. No, he doesn't, in a text he just sent me. Sorry, Jimmy. It's just the rules. Hey, you know, as you talk about preparing for retirement and you talk about retirement income planning, you know, that's really what it's about. I've been teaching a class over at Ivy Tech, the Today's Guide to Retirement Planning class, and we had a great turnout of about 12 people, I think it was, 12 or 13, of quality folks, and they were really engaged, and I appreciate that very much, and hopefully some of them are now listening to this program tonight. But when it comes to retirement income, you remember Americans think so much about net worth, they forget about net income. And right now, especially if you retired in the last couple of years, you're looking at your situation thinking, okay, wait a second. The market's been down. Maybe my bond values are down. I wasn't able to pick up the interest on my bonds that I was expecting to. And I'm out of the gate kind of slow, and I'm worried about this thing. And maybe you should be. But I can tell you from having several meetings with people just like that over the last really month and a half or so, you have to play the long game. The retirement income plan should be based on planning to live, not planning to die. Because a lot of folks will say, well, as long as I live to life expectancy, I think I'll be okay. But long lives can be expensive to support. And I was telling these folks last night at the class, people that have money that they need to worry about, actually tend to live a little bit longer because they have the money to take care of themselves. They just tend to be, I don't know, they're not sitting around smoking 3 packs of cigarettes every single day and drinking themselves to death. So these people typically live a little bit longer. So you have to have the long-term plan in mind. You can't let these short-term disruptions in the market derail you. And that is really the number one core idea when it comes to retirement income planning. Some of the strategies we focus here on the show builds a long-term plan over accepting short-term gratification, like delaying your Social Security benefits, or maybe paying a little bit more in taxes today in order to avoid paying taxes in the future. Maybe make some home renovations and living arrangements with the idea of supporting your age as you get older. You know, set up a plan that accounts for risk of later on maybe having a cognitive decline that makes it harder for you to manage your finances with age that happens. You know, there's a lot of things you can do, but keeping the long-term plan in mind is really where you start. And these strategies may not make much sense when you first do them if you were planning them for just a couple of years. But again, if you have a sustainable long-term retirement income plan, you got to do it. The other thing is, number two, don't leave money on the table. Retirement income planning is finding strategies to enhance retirement efficiency. And there's a number of strategies that can enhance efficiency over time, but maybe not necessarily over the short term. You know, with more time spent on taking, let's say, IRA distributions earlier than maybe you thought you should to avoid having this great big tax time bomb going off later on. You know, when you become 70 and a half, you have to start taking money out of your retirement accounts. And even though we logically think from an investment standpoint we should become more conservative as we get older, and for most part people do that, the IRS gets a little more aggressive with those withdrawals. So the first year it's only 3.65%, but eventually it becomes pretty darn big, and you have these massive distributions that could be coming out of your retirement account, and you have all these unintended consequences. You know, you're now paying a bigger share of your Medicare premiums and things like that that just weren't planned. So again, don't leave money on the table. Have good plans up front to reduce your taxes. Make sure that you have just a really good plan to not let any of those dollars slip through the cracks. And there's a lot of strategies for that. The other thing is use reasonable expectations for portfolio returns. Planning for the 7 and 8 and 9, 10% returns, it just doesn't work. I actually did some math on this. And let's say that you're retired and you have 60% of your money in bonds and 40% of your money in stocks. And your expectations for your bond portfolio is around 4%, and your stock portfolio is 8%. Well, when you add those two allocations together, that gives you a 5.6% expected rate of return. So know that your allocation has to meet up to whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish from a return standpoint. So a 60-40 mix is unlikely to ever return 7, 8, or 9, or 10%. And if you want those kind of returns, you're going to have to take on more risk. And when you take on more risk, you also have the likelihood that you may never actually have the money at the end whenever you need it. You know, I was looking at an example of a situation today. You have to sometimes press the I believe button, that this I believe that over time the market's going to actually return something. Because I had a situation today, a younger guy he's in, and we were talking about his fixed income and that if he continues to pull down on his fixed income, it's going to last about 7 years of his income. Well, he still had another $400,000 that would be in equities. But at 8%, that total equity account would grow to $685. At 10%, it would grow to $780. And at 12%, it would grow to $884, which would replace all the money that he has today between the two accounts. But the question is, over the next 7 years, can you really believe in your heart that you're going to hit these numbers? If the answer is yes, then your tolerance for risk is such that you can take on that. But a lot of people, the answer is no. And there have been long stretches of time where we've not made those kind of returns in the markets. You know, since 1950, this comes from by the numbers, there's been 57 different 10-year investment periods. That's going from like 1950 to 1959, 51 to 60, 52 to 61, et cetera. I mean, so on and so forth. So the S&P 500 has actually produced an average total return of less than 7%, 14 out of 57 of periods of time. That's 25% of the time. So 25% of the time, the market over a 10-year period of time would never have gotten to those returns that you expect out of the market. And we've had decades where we've made no money. I mean, look at the last decade, 2000 to 2010. I mean, we were down, we were up, we were back down, we were back up. And pretty much by the time the decade was over, you didn't make any money. So you have to be careful whenever you're expecting your expectations on your portfolio returns are too high. You just have to be really, really careful of that. You know, build an integrated strategy to manage various risk. That's a big one. Approach retirement income tools with an agnostic view. You know, the financial services industry is really divided between two camps, those that focus on investment solutions and those that focus on income solutions, and some would call it insurance solutions. And both see little role for the other side, to be quite honest. And the most efficient retirement strategies usually require both. It kind of makes sense, and that's more common sense than anything else. So in this regard, it's wrong to describe the stock market as a casino, which some of the insurance people do, or to lump annuities together with every other type of an annuity to produce that guaranteed income that you might want in retirement. So it's really important to have a better understanding of how these different annuity products work, the different investment products work, and just don't get down on things that you simply aren't up on. And that's really the case with most people in our industry, is that they're either hardcore one way or hardcore the other. They really don't take both ideas into consideration. So again, start from a very agnostic position and don't take everything for face value. Another good thing that you should do, and we talked about this in retirement class, get yourself a balance sheet, a household balance sheet. And when I talk about your assets as you move into retirement, it's not just about financial assets, but about human capital. I mean, what about continuing a career or part-time work? You have home equity. You know, of course, your financial assets like your bank accounts, brokerage accounts, retirement accounts, insurance, annuities, all that. But then also social capital, Social Security, Medicare. These are all assets. Company pensions, whatever it might be. That's your assets. And then you have your liabilities. Of course, we all have our fixed expenses like our basic living needs and taxes, and you know, maybe have debt payments or something like that. But then what about your discretionary expenses, travel, leisure, lifestyle improvements, whatever it might be, and then contingencies. That's also a contingent liability, like long-term care or healthcare. You know, Fidelity has done research on this, and they say a married couple age 65 is going to spend over $250,000 on healthcare-related expenses. And this does not include long-term care. This is simply the things that your typical insurance doesn't pay for, your co-pays, your deductibles, you know, your eyeglasses, your hearing aids, medical devices of any kind aren't generally covered. So $250,000. Legacy goals, maybe you want to leave money behind to your family. So there's a lot of basic things that you need to take into account when you're building some retirement income plans and their core ideas, you know, distinguishing between technical liquidity and true liquidity. You know, I was just saying the other day, yeah, this investment's liquid, but it's down 50%. So are you really going to sell it? Or, yeah, I have this annuity that has a 5% surrender charge. Is that more palatable than an investment that's down 50%? So understand liquidity. Liquidity sometimes can be a little bit of an illusion. Hey, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about fraud prevention. There's tons of these phone scams going on that we want you to know about, and then you can communicate that to your loved ones to make sure they don't get taken. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. You know, we hear of these scams happening all the time. There's several of them out there. They're generally phone scams, and they're generally targeted towards seniors. I never answer my home phone. If you call me on my home phone, it's not going to get answered, and it may never even get checked, the answering machine. It's just kind of the way it goes now. If you know me and need to get a hold of me, you'll text me, call me on my cell phone, call me at the office, whatever. But we rarely even check our home phone's answering machine. So, but who does answer their phone at home? The older folks do. That's what they've always done. I mean, that's what they do. So when the phone rings at 2 in the afternoon, guess what? It gets answered. Or 10 o'clock at night, it'll get answered. And there's these big scams. I mean, there's the grandkids scam. This is where you have someone that calls and they say, "Grandma, this is Nathan, and I'm in deep trouble. Don't call my mom and let them know that I'm in trouble. They're going to be worried and I'm going to be in trouble. But I need $500 to get me out of this pinch, and I need you to go down to the Western Union and wire it." And they just, you know, they know enough information. They're just scammy enough that they can get that grandparent to go down and do it. And I would tell your parents, your grandparents, hey, if anyone ever calls and says, "Hey, I'm your grandson, I'm your granddaughter, and don't call my mom or don't call my dad," guess what? Hang up the phone, call your mom, call their dad, and see if they're really in trouble. The other one that I've seen lately is online, and it's a Facebook scam. We actually had a client who had a father who's 86 that got hacked on his Facebook page, and you can't blame him for doing what he did. Basically, all of a sudden, a big screen popped up on his Facebook page that said, "You have been hacked. Call this number that he thought was Facebook." So he called it, and they said, "Well, yeah, we're going to have to set you up a new Facebook page. We're going to need you to pay us $750 to do all this, and we're going to clean up your computer," and basically allowed them to take his computer over. And ended up, of course, costing the $750, and he actually ran this fake Facebook page for several days before the daughter, my client, got involved, and they were able to figure out how to actually get a hold of Facebook and take it down. But at the same time, they were able to access some bank information and other things via his computer. So be very careful. And this hack came out of China. So be careful about that. We have a scam that just came out this week that Duke Energy talked about. Phone scammers posing as Duke Energy employees call and they say, "Hey, you're late on your bill, and we're going to disconnect you." And even they'll rig the caller ID to make it look like it's a call from Duke Energy, or to tell you to put money on a prepaid debit card. They'll ask for the account number. So don't believe it. I mean, that's just this thing. It doesn't work that way. Duke Energy won't call and demand immediate payment about money owed without first sending a notification by mail. They'll never ask a credit or debit card over the phone. So if you have any doubts, just hang up and then look up the actual Duke number and call them. The other one, and this is a biggie, it's the IRS scam. And this has been happening a lot. And we've had several of our clients get attemptedly taken advantage of. I'm sure some have had, you know, it happened to them where they paid them. But the IRS, they won't call you on the phone, but here's what happens. They'll call, leave a message, these scammers will, and say, "It's the IRS, give us a call back." So they call, the people pick up the phone, they call them back, and they say, "Hey, you know, you owe money, and we're going to, you know, levy everything you have." And I mean, they scare them into saying, okay, I'll pay, and they get them to pay right then. Well, that's a scam. The IRS will never, ever, ever call you that way. They'll send you notices and notices and notices and notices, but they'll never, ever, ever call. So just again, hang up. It's not real. So don't get sucked in. We have a guest that we're going to be joined by in just a few minutes. Her name is Virginia. Virginia is, I believe, 86 years old, and she was a subject of a recent IRS phone scam. I talked to her today briefly, and it sounds like that she's been attempted another scam on the computer just recently. But she was willing to join us and talk about what happened to her and how she handled it and whether or not she was taken advantage of or not. So I'm really excited about having Virginia. And today she said to me, if what I'm going to do on your show will help just one other person keep from getting taken, then it's going to be worth the time. So looking forward to having Virginia call in just a few minutes. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. You know, growing up, you never really thought about being scammed. It just never really came across my mind. But nowadays, it seems like everywhere you turn, you have to be on your guard. And in particular, people that have been on this earth longer than I have are even more trusting, and they do what they say they're going to do. And they're focusing on these folks that are a little bit older, and there's a lot of scams going on out there. Joining me now on the line is Virginia. And Virginia, you had a recent phone scam. The IRS called you, quote, the IRS, it really wasn't the IRS, and tried to get you to pay some money that you obviously didn't owe. Walk us through, Virginia, what actually happened to you and then how you handled it.
Okay. I came home and had a message on the answering machine that said it was from the IRS. Well, of course, that will get your attention. And that was my first mistake, is calling back. But I did call the number they left. And, of course, then it was a long-distance call, so I was paying for this call. And they answered IRS. That was the phone answering, IRS. And then this man proceeded to tell me that I had owed $9,600 in my taxes, and that they had sent me two notices, which I obviously ignored. I said to them, you must have the wrong number, because I have my taxes done professionally, and I've never received any notices. He says, oh, yes, we sent them. And the other clue I should have had, the man had a foreign accent.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in hindsight, you know. But he proceeded to give me his name and all this big, long number that went with it, and like a identification number or something.
Yeah.
And told me that if I didn't right away send the $9,600, that they would come to my house and take me to jail and get all the money I had in the bank.
And Virginia, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
86.
So 86 years old, sir, and you have your wits about you as much as any 40-year-old out there, because I've known you a long time. But I can tell you, Virginia, what you just described, if you called the IRS, they'll answer the phone. An Internal Revenue Service agent will get on, and they always give their first name and their badge number, which is, so these scammers really, they know what they're doing to try and sound official, don't they?
They certainly did, except my clue would have been the foreign accent.
So,
and I did talk to him. He told me, I said, you're very mistaken. And I said, by the way, I don't know who you say you are, and I don't know that this is the IRS. I only know that you told me it was. So I argued a bit. And then he said very nonchalantly, I don't have to put up with this mess. And I'm thinking, I don't either. So I hung up.
Then what did you do after that?
Well, I called you and I called my son-in-law to tell him. And, of course, my son-in-law, both of you said, you don't even need to pick up the phone and answer it.
Yeah.
But 2 hours later, I got another call. And it was the IRS, and it was a lady. And she said, I need to talk to you about your taxes. And I just hung up.
Good for you. But, Virginia, how many people do you think wouldn't have done that, would have been freaked out by the fact that they thought the IRS was after them, they thought they were going to go to jail? Because I can tell you, whenever you ask people about the authority of the IRS, it just puts the fear of God into them. I mean, do you think that there are people out there that would be in your situation that would say, okay, I'll go get the money and I'll pay you the $9,600?
I'm sure that there are people. I hope I don't know them.
Well,
but I'm just saying that some people are very naive. I'm a college graduate, and I'm smart enough to know what's going on. But still, all of that considered, I was weak enough to call the number back that they left and listen to his spiel until he got mad. I was asking him. He says, I don't have to put up with this. And I said, I wish I'd said, I don't either, before I hung up, but I just hung up.
Where'd you grow up, Virginia?
In Texas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, people from Texas are pretty strong and strong-willed people, so that may have something to do with it.
Well, hey, I just wondered how they got my name and would do that.
I think that there's search engines out there that they can, you know, determine, you know, how much money you have, how old you are, find your phone number, and they just start going. And there's you know, hundreds of thousands of really millions of people like you out there, and they were they're just fishing around, and they are so slick. And Virginia, you also said you recently had another attempt, but it was via email.
I did. I was on the computer, and I had an email from a lady. I didn't recognize the name, but she said, how are you? I've missed you. And she said, I may need your assistance. And I thought that her name was the name of the lady I had been trying to contact through the Indiana Retired Teachers. So I answered it, and she said, well, I've come off to visit my mother who's ill, and I need $1,200. She said, I thought that I was calling or emailing my bank, but I got you, and maybe you can help me. And if you can, I'll tell you how to send the money. And I answered it and said no, and
yeah,
that was it.
Well, I know I had a client, Virginia, who was sucked into the foreign scam where a foreign person would say, I need to send $100 million to the U.S., and if you'll send me $500 as a procurement fee, then we'll do this. And they sent the $500, and then they needed $1,000 more, and they ended up getting sucked for $30,000 before they finally threw the towel in. So in this person, highly educated, smart person, and just got sucked into to ultimately what was greed. In this case, they're feeding on the fear. And, you know, we only have two main emotions when it comes to this money is fear and greed. And, Virginia, you said about 2 weeks after this IRS scam happened, there was an article that came out in the newspaper about
it. There was. And if I had just seen that article, because it was very well written, explaining that there were big IRS scams and that you should not even answer them. If they said to the IRS to hang up because the IRS will not call you.
Right.
They will write you a letter if there's a problem.
And right now, Virginia, you may have not listened to the first part of the program, but Duke Energy is telling customers, hey, don't fall for the scam. Phone scammers are posing as Duke employees. They're calling and insisting that you're delinquent on your bill. They threaten to turn off your power. They even rig people's callers' IDs so it looks like someone's calling from Duke Energy. And Duke is saying the same thing to the IRS. They're going to never call and demand for immediate payment. They'll send notification by mail. So, again, Virginia, we're trying to get this information out so that other people can tell. Maybe like your son-in-law would be listening to the show and that you didn't hear it, but he could go tell you that, hey, Mom, if Duke calls demanding for money, it's a scam too. So what we're trying to do is just help prevent that from happening to anybody else.
Well, I've read in the paper where people have been scammed, and I've always said that could never happen to me. And that's a good example right there. I knew I shouldn't have even answered it, but it was hindsight that I knew. I didn't know when I answered it immediately that it would, and all I remember about it, and I wrote down the man's name and this number he gave me. I did all of this. But then I immediately called you, and then I called my son-in-law.
Yeah, yeah. And folks, if you are a subject of fraud, contact the Indiana Attorney General's office. In fact, if you'd like to go to in.gov, you can check out Senior Fraud, and it lays out all of the common scam targeting practices out there, the telemarketing, the home improvements, the charitable giving scams. And people are out there trying to scam people every single day. I mean, even locally, credit cards are being swiped at gas pumps and then being used. So, Virginia, I bet many, many years ago, growing up in Texas, where a handshake meant a handshake and you didn't have to worry about your neighbor scamming on you, we've come a long way, and kind of it's not a good way to where we are today.
Well, I agree with you that I would never have thought of anything happening like that in my past, but I've read in the paper about people who've been scammed, and I thought that could never, ever happen to me. And yet I went along with it for probably 10 minutes, paying for my own phone call.
Yeah, and if you're on Facebook, Virginia, make sure that you don't get scammed again. I had a client I just talked about before you came on that a big thing came up on their page that said, hey, you've been hacked, call this number. They thought they were calling Facebook. They were actually calling someone that was housed out of China and ended up getting all of their bank information and getting quite a bit of money out of them. So,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, just and again, these things would pop up, and why wouldn't you call? You would think it's Facebook. Call Facebook. Here's the number. So you would call Facebook, and then they would say, for $750, we can clean you up and send you on your way. And, you know, so like you said, if you get scammed, first of all, don't be embarrassed about it. Just get out there and tell other people about it. Make sure you report it to the Indiana Attorney General's office. So,
well,
hey,
I'm glad to have the opportunity because I know there are a lot of people who are very naive and maybe not well enough educated to realize what was going on.
Virginia, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate you sharing your story, and hopefully what you just shared will help someone else.
Thank you, David.
Appreciate it, Virginia. Folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get into some questions of the week. I have about 12 of them here, so we'll see. But obviously, the number one question we've had all week long is, what do you think about these markets? We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you miss any part of the program on Thursday nights, you can always check it out at 9 a.m. on Saturday mornings, which seems to be the most popular time to listen to the show, and then always on WGCLradio.com. We encourage you, too, to contact us at cfci.us, and if you have questions or comments, you can send them to us, and we will answer them, and we may very well use them on the air. So we have this question of the week segment we've been doing for a really, really long time. And we're just going to answer these questions as they come up. But the number one question, obviously, has been, what do you think about the markets? Well, I mean, here's the thing. It is what it is. It's been very volatile. It tends to be driven by what oil prices are doing. But the bottom line is that the market's been pricing in the possibility of recession here in the United States. And if you go back the last couple of years, the Wall Street Journal, the economists polled by the Wall Street Journal, always give their predictions of the percentage chance of the U.S. going into a recession. So 2 years ago, 2014, it was like 15-16% chance they thought that we would go into a recession. We didn't. 2015, they said that it was about a 17-18% chance we would go into a recession, and we didn't. And this year, it's closer to 20%. So there is this creeping into the market. But I had a conversation today with a client over in, he was actually lives in Massachusetts, and fairly new client, obviously off to a little bit of a rough start, and we were talking about, or he was asking, what are some of the things that would have to occur for you to finally just throw the towel in and just move into maybe some high-quality bonds or something like that? So Rod and I were talking with him together, and I said, you know, one thing would be that the interest rate curve flattens out immensely. And I described it this way, that the 30-year Treasury is sitting around 2.8%. The 10-year Treasury is around 1.8%. So that's pretty flat. It's not real steep. But typically when you start to have a flattening of the curve, or what we call an inversion of the curve, where the long-term rates are lower than the short-term rates, then that's very recessionary. We've had it happen only one other time in my career, and it indicated a recession. So I would tell you that as this curve is flattened, that's given everyone some concerns about the long-term growth and therefore a recession. But we don't believe that's the case. I think what we're going to see is just a lot of volatility. We're going to see some uncertainty, obviously, but then when first quarter numbers come out from companies and we see, okay, how has the strong dollar, how has low oil, how has the troubles in China, how have, you know, this, that, and the other really affected the earnings of U.S. companies, then we'll start to get a better picture of how the year is going to unfold. So what do we think about the markets? Well, here's what I think. If you're in a strategy that you were committed to, stay in the strategy. You don't want to get out of it. We've had folks over the years who have let the tail wag the dog and say, oh my gosh, I think the world's coming to an end. I want to move here. And then by the time something actually moves in the market, because it happens quickly, I mean, sentiment could change overnight. And all of a sudden, the first 10 is the worst 10 to miss in the market. So you want to be position correctly. Don't chase ideology. You want to stay into a committed position. So even if it didn't work last year, or even 2 years in a row, if it has a long history of working, just stick with it. It typically does. Okay, How about tax documents? My goodness gracious, when I walked around the office to ask about questions of the week, every single support staff member said, tax documents. And said, yeah, I know. Here's the thing. Everyone thinks that they have to be out by January 31st. They don't have to be out by January 31st. So several years ago, they changed the rules to allow brokerage firms more flexibility to get it right. It used to be they'd send them out January 31st, only to send a revised version 2 months later, and you've already had your taxes done. Now you have to redo them, and it's a big pain in the rear end. So they've changed the rule. So, you know, a lot of them started going out this week, but I would say by the end of February, 1st of March, you should have everything that you need. If you are an investor and you're invested in things that produce tax documents, then you're just going to have to be one of those people that don't run off the first few weeks of, you know, February to get your taxes done. It's just not going to work that way. Here's another one. This is one that comes up seldom, but it came up a couple times this week. How often do bonds pay interest? Well, typically bonds have interest dates that are 6 months apart, so they pay interest twice a year. So if you have a $10,000 bond that has a 5% interest rate, that's $500 a year that you're going to make. So $250 would be paid at one point in the year, and then 6 months later, $250 more. And unlike anything else like a mutual fund or a CD, something that you could compound or reinvest into, you can't into a bond. So that's called simple interest. So that interest actually doesn't end up back up on top of the bond, it ends up in your money market account. And this person that I was talking about this week, when it came to his bonds, he said, well, heck, I didn't make any money on this bond. I'm like, yeah, you did. All that money's up here in the money market account, because he looked at buying the bond for $9,800 and it was a $10,000 face value. And when he got the $10,000, he thought he made $200 over the last 5 years. Well, he didn't. He also made 5% interest on the $10,500 a year for 5 years, or $2,500. So he actually made $2,500 plus two, so he was happier after I showed him. Here's another one. Check the time. All right. Let's see. How do financial advisors get paid? A couple different ways. One, and I'm going to give you one corny way. So three things. One, they get paid fees, and the fees can be either for work they're doing on an hourly basis, but more commonly it's being paid under the assets that they're managing. Those fees are all over the place. Some people are looking at about 0.7, 0.8% all the way up to 1.5%. But be careful, because the investments themselves might have fees as well, so you have to look all in. So even though one fee might be 1.5%, and they're using all individual stocks and bonds, well, there's no internal expense to that, so you're all in at 1.5. Well, if you have a mutual fund platform that has fund expenses that run maybe 0.8 to 1%, and then you have another percent on top of that, then you're at 2% all in, but it appears on the surface that 1% is cheaper than 1.5. So just know that's how they get paid. And then the other side is they do earn commissions. There's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes that's in the best interest of you, is to actually just pay a commission in a buy and hold situation. It's not a managed account, and that's how they get paid. Now, I can tell you there's some regulation coming on how much commissions can be when it comes to retirement accounts. We don't know yet what those regs are, but when they do, we'll let you know. But it won't affect you necessarily, but just affect how the advisor gets paid. But it looks like the 1% rule is going to prevail. Here's another one. Here's a good one. How do I move my 401k after I've left my job? Well, typically, once you leave your job, you get your last paycheck, you can move your 401k. First thing you do is you'll contact the 401k provider and just say, hey, I'd like to roll this over to my IRA, or I'd like to roll it to my new 401k. I mean, there's several different options and what you can do with the money. But if you want to move it, that's what you do first. They will then generally say, are you moving this to another 401k, a traditional IRA, a rollover IRA? And you just tell them where it's going to land, and then you tell them how to make the check payable. You do not want it payable to you. If it gets payable to you, that's a taxable event. They'll typically withhold 20%, send it to the federal government, just in case you don't roll it over and spend it. So that's not the way you want to do it. You want to do a trustee-to-trustee transfer, so the money would be made payable to your new IRA for your benefit. It can be mailed to you, that's not a problem, but as long as it's made payable to that new custodian, you then deliver it, it gets deposited, and that's how you do it. Pretty simple, but easy to mess up as well. Let's see, here's another one. How much should I be saving? Well, of course, my answer would be as much as possible, but realistically, it kind of depends on your age. if you're young and starting off, you know, mid-20s to 30, you know, 10 to 15% typically will get you there. If you're older, you know, you're in your 40s and 50s, you might want to ramp that up a little bit. But it also depends upon what other retirement income sources you might have. Like if you still work for a school system, a municipality, or a company that offers a pension, then you probably could get away with saving a little bit less. But when you're on your own and you have no pension, then you're going to have to save enough to make up for the pension too. So what we're seeing is, unfortunately, folks that are in their 40s and certainly in their 50s are having to sock away, you know, 20%, sometimes it's 25% of their money. It just depends. It's all based on doing a well-written retirement income plan. What are you going to need, when you're going to need it, how much you have now, what kind of savings, what kind of return, and then you just build into that how much it is that you're going to have to save. There's only a handful of moving parts. I wish it was a real simple answer, but unfortunately, it's not. We got time for one more. Is Medicare and Social Security two separate sign-ups, and how do I sign up, and when do I need to sign up? Well, yeah, they're two separate sign-ups. So Medicare Part A kind of automatically hits you at age 65. You will have to go on to sign up for Part B, which is your doctor visits, and then you'll have to get with an insurance person to buy your supplements and things like that. And then Social Security is an entirely different different sign-up. You can kind of go to the same ssa.gov and sign up for both of them at once, and it will ask you what you want to sign up for and what you need to do. But they are two separate sign-ups. And Medicare, far as Part B goes, typically it's, you know, it's a seven-month period, 3 months prior to 65th birthday, the month you turn 65, and 3 months after, and that's your penalty-free phase, so you can go in there anytime and sign up. I better take another break, I think. Actually, let me see. I got one more in me here. How do you change beneficiaries on your accounts, and what can you put a beneficiary on? Well, you contact your custodians, you contact your broker dealer, whatever, and you just tell them how you want your beneficiaries. They'll send you forms, you got to sign it. Make sure they've been accepted, because I have had situations where we've sent in beneficiary forms and assumed, and you know what assuming stands for, that they actually have changed it and they didn't. So you want to make sure you get confirmation of the beneficiary change. But what can you put beneficiaries on? Really, in Indiana, almost everything. You have IRA accounts, life insurance, annuities, anything like that would have anything, a beneficiary. But also, you can put transfer on death or pay on death to just about anything else, which are bank accounts. They could be your home, your car, and that assigns a beneficiary to everything. It avoids probate. It goes directly, direct transfer to those that you indicated. So, yeah, and I'm not saying that you should do that, but that is something that you can do. So, hey, let's take another break. We'll come back and wrap up the big show. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. Just a few seconds really left in today's show. So, hey, hope you enjoyed it. 8 core ideas to guide retirement income planning, fraud prevention, not being taken by phone scams. Thank you to Virginia, our 86-year-old friend that called in to help everyone out. And again, questions of the week, if you'd like to submit those, go to cfci.us. And don't forget, stay in the right-hand lane if you want to go 37 south. Otherwise, it's a 20-mile loop to get you back to town. We're going to take a long break here. We'll talk to you next Thursday, everyone. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.